following podcast may contain spoilers.
For one final time, we turn to you, the binge lords of Twitter, to tell us which movie we should watch and review. We gave you four options for films celebrating their 25th anniversary in 2020, coming in dead last with only 11% of the votes. Bad Boys coming in third place, only 28% of the votes, Clueless with 30% of the votes, and coming in at number two in a close race, Braveheart, and coming in at number one with 31% of the votes, we're talking about Tommy Boy.
Education laid the foundation.
I got a D+!
Heredity opened the door.
Oh!
And dedication took it from there.
Oh!
Do we really want to put the future of the company in Tommy's hands?
Paramount Pictures presents...
It's a clip, huh? Are you sure?
Chris Farley.
That's gonna leave a mark.
David Spade.
Yikes.
Tommy Boy.
Did you live under power lines as a kid or something?
Rated PG-13.
Yes, it's hard to believe that 1995 was 25 years ago, but it was. And it's also hard to believe that this was one of the most participated in polls that we've had yet on Twitter, at least since our relaunch. We want to thank all the people who retweeted or voted or who shared the poll or who just liked it. We got a lot of thousands and thousands and thousands of engagements on that tweet. So we thank everybody involved. It's been fun kind of doing these, and we might try to incorporate more polls in the show as the future as we progress back towards more of a regular season. We'll have more information in the not-too-distant future about when we come back. It's going to be sooner than you think, but probably not as soon as you want. But we'll be coming back. We're not going to leave you hanging for too much longer. We're going to get the season 4.1 back on track, determine which movie should go into the vault for all time, even beyond the end times, because we got more work to do. I'm Jason from Binge Movies. Joining me today, our illustrious producer, the Reverend Combat Jones, CJ for short. How the hell you doing, CJ?
I am sweaty and frantic, much like the performance.
David Spade?
Yeah, much like David Spade.
It is very, very, is what we like to call it, a nice tropical heat, a nice swampy, wet, mildewy heat here in the bunker.
Yes.
Yeah. We're a lot of talcum powder in a lot of important places just to keep things a little fresh, you know. Yeah, we were still searching for that Manscaped sack toner sponsorship for the podcast, the Lawnmower 3.0, where they give you the ball toner. That way all your ball skin is the same color.
Yeah, I know. Like we've been asking for this stuff forever.
I have the crop preserver. I use it for my personal use. And nothing against the fine folks at Manscaped, but it is not keeping up with the Vietnam-like conditions in this bunker right now.
I've been growing it out for a while to have a before and after picture. That way people can really see how the product works.
Are we talking
I'm committed.
I've been growing it out during COVID.
Yeah, I mean, some people grow out their hair. I guess that's the same thing.
Yeah.
Grow out a beard.
Ironically enough, yeah, most barber shops have been closed. We don't have barbers here in the bunker anyways. But even if I did, last time I went to a barber, he was not too keen on shaving my ball hair when
right?
I asked him. Yeah. He said it was going to be a premium service, and it was only done in certain parts of town, so... Anywho, we are here. I thought for sure we were going to end up watching Clueless. I was pulling for Clueless. I was really hoping. It's been a long time. That was one of my favorite movies of the 90s as a nice teenage boy. I could really relate with all the characters. And I really did. I really liked that movie. But I haven't seen it in a long time, maybe the early 2000s. And I haven't revisited yet. And I was kind of hoping to do a revisit of it. So an ever-growing list of movies to talk about on the show. Added to the list. It's going to go on there at some point. We, of course, once we get season 4.2 back on track, we will be talking about the top-grossing films of 1995. None of these movies appear on that list, which is why they were on the poll. Instead, I mean, literally, it's 28%, 30%, 31%.
Ridiculous.
Down to the wire, and it was a horse race between those three.
You and I were texting each other the entire time.
Yeah, I was like... I don't know what we're going to end up watching, and it's Tommy Boy. What are your memories of Tommy Boy?
Tommy Boy was, we had cable TV. And so when a premium channel would have their free preview weekend, we would set the
HBO show Tommy Boy all the time.
We'd sit there by the VCR and hit record, and then you'd watch those movies over and over again until the next preview.
Yeah.
Either, I think, 6 months later or a year later.
Yeah.
This was one of those movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it when I was a teenager.
Is Tommy Boy the epitome of a cable movie? Because I feel like the movie came out was not a success at the box office. We'll get into some of that here in a split second.
Yeah.
But I do feel like most people saw it via HBO or Cinemax or some form of cable.
Yeah, I think that's the case. I mean, would Tommy Boy be a movie you'd rush out to see? Probably not.
In 95, though.
In 95, I mean...
Comedies were still making money.
I guess Dumb and Dumber
made
the list, and this is pretty much kind of close to Dumb and Dumber as far as something happens, go on the road, resolve.
I see it more as a Walmart version of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
That's even better.
Tommy Boy has a 42% on Rotten Tomatoes. It was directed by Peter Sagal. It was written by Bonnie Turner, who I believe worked on the Wayne's World movies. And I think she did some TV shows. Maybe I want to say Third Rock from the Sun. That's coming off the dome. That might be a boner and a botch.
I think you're right.
Let us know. Terry Turner, Fred Wolf. It was released March 31st, not a promising date, 1995, on a budget of $20 million. Where did that money go? Dan Aykroyd? Rob Lowe? Ooh. Bo Derek, probably.
Bo Derek.
Most of that money probably, like, how did this movie cost $20 million? In 1995, $20
million? $20
million. That money went to Rob Lowe, Bo Derek, and Dan Aykroyd.
Rob Lowe's not even credited in this movie.
I know, yes. He doesn't mean he didn't get paid for it, though.
Good point.
On a budget of $20 million, so movies roughly have to double their budget to break even, it only made $32.7 million at the box office.
Wow.
It was a flop, hence the definitive cable movie, perhaps. As is tradition around here, we have our one-sentence plot synopsis. Mine is, the idiot heir of a Midwest auto parts manufacturer must take to the road and learn to sell his fat ass off to save his company, his town, and his father's legacy.
I wrote one this week.
This year?
This year.
Okay.
Yeah, well, that's true as well.
Yeah.
A 90s version of The Odd Couple fumble-fucks their way into saving the town business from swinger cons and a sociopathic tycoon.
Nice! There you go. That's more of the spirit.
Woo!
There you go. Of course, we have our protagonist. We have the late, great Chris Farley as Tommy Callahan III. We have David Spade, who's sort of an anti-hero, sort of a secondary antagonist, but also protagonist, kind of asshole. He's Richard. We have the late, great, truly late, great Brian Dennehy as Big Tom Callahan. Our antagonists are Bo Derek and Rob Lowe, who is as uncredited as Paul. Bo Derek plays Beverly, the stepmom slash Black Widow sort of figure.
Yeah.
And we have our side characters, Julie Warner as Michelle, who is a low-key 90s cutie who completely disappeared off the face of the earth. Not a great actress, though. And we also have Dan Aykroyd as Ray Zielinski. This movie opens up, and my first thought was, the kid isn't husky enough. I use husky because that's the 90s term for fat.
Yeah.
Children were not fat, they were husky. I know because my mom shopped at the Husky section of JCPenney because I enjoyed Coca-Cola and oatmeal cream pies.
So you got the Arizona Husky jeans?
Arizona Husky jeans. No, I got Levi.
Oh, yeah. Look at you.
My mom would splurge on actual Levi's. Lee or Levi. I'm sure I had some Arizonas. I had a lot of Arizona t-shirts. But she would splurge on the Levi's. They were Husky, though. In 1995, that's a fat kid. And in 2020, that's just a regular kid.
That's a dude.
It's just a kid. That's just an 8-year-old.
Yeah, a guy going to school.
Yeah, it's just an 8-year-old going to school. I looked at that kid. I was like, that kid's supposed to be fat? That's how much things have changed. Yeah. One, he's playing outside before school. And pre-COVID, no kid was playing outside,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, it's weird. They actually see children engaging with nature and being outside now when we're supposed to be in lockdown.
Yeah.
But when we could have had free run of the place, most kids were inside playing Nintendo Switch or watching Minecraft on YouTube.
Yeah, and someone's not dropping that kid off at school. He's a rich kid.
That's a good
point. That kid's going to private school, and that kid's getting a chauffeur.
Well, see, yeah, I don't know about that. One, how many private schools are in Sandusky, Ohio? I'm sure there are some. He would maybe go to a Catholic school.
Not too far from Toledo.
Maybe go to a Catholic school. That would be the private school. He wouldn't go to like a boarding school. Because yes. Big Tom is a blue-collar kind of guy.
That's true. He probably wanted his kid to have... Yeah.
Right? They're self-made, and they're blue-collar Midwesterners, you know, God-fearing Americans, right? So they're not... So, but it appears, I think, that they're probably Episcopalian or a Catholic based on the priest at the wedding.
That's true.
So he'd probably go to Catholic school because also, I guarantee you, Big Tom second, Big Tom played football and would want Tommy Boy to play football.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, because
he plays rugby for some reason
for Marquette, which actually is where Farley went.
Did Farley play? Farley did play rugby, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, at that's
Marquette.
Why it was rugby.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Well, I would it'd be lacrosse if it was a Catholic school.
I can't.
That's more of like an East Coast thing than a Midwest thing. There's not a lot of lacrosse in the Midwest. Midwest would be football or hockey probably.
Yeah,
but he's not built for hockey.
Yeah. Maybe goalie.
Not so much rugby though.
Maybe goalie.
Like 1980-something Sandusky, Ohio. Yeah, it's not a rugby rugby town. Anyway, so Tommy and Big Tom, I think Brian Dennehy, Chris Farley have some pretty amazing chemistry, actually.
Yes.
And Brian Dennehy was a like legitimate actor. And the fact that he is in this movie.
He was
and
the
is
best
like,
part.
And, right, yeah, and it's kind of game.
Yeah.
And is not... He's not half-assing it.
No.
He's, like, taking the role serious.
He is. And, like, when I looked at him, like, that's... Because I worked in sales, and I had a bunch of people coming in from a bunch of different reps coming in.
You mean
in.
Before you were a slave of the Nutwall Disney
Yes,
Corporation,
before I was
in
taken.
In your previous life. Interesting. Yeah. I don't remember most of my previous life.
Yeah.
My last memory was walking into a closed-down Hollywood Video or Blockbuster, and I remember going in for cheap DVDs and... Next thing I knew, I was here in this bunker.
Yeah, I remember
reviewing movies endlessly.
I remember I had a headache, and someone offered me an Advil gel. Like, oh, it's a blue pill. I took it, and I woke up here. It was really weird. But
in your previous life.
In my previous life, I would have a bunch of those kind of guys come in, and he nails it.
Yeah.
Like even like the upper management of that style of smaller business that really is just a salesman. I mean, I work for a guy who sold lighting at a funeral.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Legitly, like, sold, like, a whole, like, so I know these types of people. He nails
it. Right.
Little fun fact. Remember the last time we recorded Gladiator?
Yeah.
I said, remember that, I don't know if you know this, but there's a 92 version of Gladiator with a bunch of boxers.
Yeah.
He plays the main villain.
Oh.
He's in there. Who runs the illegal boxing ring.
Yeah.
So I
always remember Brian Dennehy from Cocoon.
Yeah.
Among other things.
Yeah. Anyway, not to get too far off the rails, he nails it.
Yeah. Yeah, he seems like a real person, right? Like, he seems like, okay, yeah, that's the sort of guy who would be, like, fifth generation, blue-collar, auto part manufacturer in Sandusky, Ohio.
Yeah, you're not going to believe this. You know, I'm selling, you know, I'm 8 whiskey sours deep. Yeah. That's him. He's
a salesman, but also is a person of integrity and kind of, like, backs up his word or whatever.
Yeah.
Tommy Boy's been in college for 8 years. He's basically just... smoking weed, and ripping bongs, and doing keg stands, right? He's a party animal in the Belushi model, both in real life, unfortunately, for Chris Farley. And that was the character often he played on Saturday Night Live and in this film. And he's, you know, it's like a poor man's Animal House. He's the poor man's Bluto, kind of.
Yeah.
And then he, you know, goes back home to Sandusky, Ohio, thinks he's just going to work in the docks. Instead, his dad's got him an office, which is really how that works, too. There's like the idiot son. It was like maybe good natured, but has no work ethic and knows nothing about anything. Gets a corner office, and all of a sudden is like vice president of the company or something.
Yeah, the one thing is it did show that he was a people person.
Yeah,
as soon as he walks in, hey Tommy, how's it going? Good, because
he's
on the D plus.
He's likable.
Yeah, he's likable except for the boss he had,
RT or whatever.
Who hates him.
Yeah, so he's given this position, and his dad really wants to train him up for him to take over the business, right? Keep it in the family. And the other announcement that he has, and that's where he gets hooked up with David Spade's Richard character, who's like some kind of personal assistant or underling of some kind. I didn't really know what his role is.
Do you know who's supposed to play, who was actually hired before David Spade or was cast to do it?
Was it Rob Schneider?
Rob Lowe.
Oh.
The dude went from playing the second highest character
to
being uncredited when the Icarumba girl, lady, woman, is credited in the film.
Wow. I wonder why he ended up being uncredited.
Yeah, that's weird.
Was he filming something else at the time and just kind of did them a favor?
I'm not sure. Maybe they wrote his part in or...
Yeah, maybe. It. See, for him to be uncredited, though, makes me think maybe he was under contract with another movie.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, I still want to support the movie.
Yeah.
And so I'll because, like, most of his scenes, I think he filmed probably, like, in 3 days.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them were, like, well, most of his scenes are just him and Bo Derek.
Him and Bo, but there is the one where he goes, where they actually filmed it in Canada with the cows.
Yeah, which we're getting to. There's the wedding where he's with everybody.
And then there's the end.
Yeah.
And then there's the stuff. So he had.
Maybe a week. Maybe a week tops.
A week or two.
No.
Or spots. Like, okay, I can come this weekend.
Yeah, right.
Film it here.
Big Tom, his surprise is he's given him this job. And he's also, his other surprise is that he's got a new fiance, soon to be wife, who's Bo Derek. And we have a joke where she's a 10, because at that point, Bo Derek was most famous for making the movie with her husband, John Derek, I think, which was called 10, with like, it's him and her and Dudley Moore, I think. And that's what she was like. Most famous for maybe 10, 15 years previous to this. And that's a joke that flies over the head of probably anyone under the age of like 42.
Flew over my head.
She's a 10. I was like, oh, God. And she comes out of the water almost the exact same way. Only instead of having the long braided hair, for some reason, she has one of the worst pixie cuts I've ever seen on a human being.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened there. But anywho, so yeah, Bo Derek comes out and she's this svelte, ostensibly beautiful woman, but she's with Big Fat Tom Callahan. They met at a fat farm. She was a trainer there or something, or a counselor there, and then fell in love with him. And she's got a son who is Rob Lowe, who now Tommy's super excited that he's going to have a new brother because he's going to have a stepbrother. And they decided to go on a night in the town. And Rob Lowe has a great line of, what is there to do in this town other than eating? So they're like drinking in the car, drinking and driving, living that Midwest life. They decided to go cow tipping. Cow tipping is a rural legend, not an urban legend, it's a rural legend, because cows sleep on the ground.
Really?
They lay down. They don't sleep standing upright.
I've never been cow tipping, never wanted to.
This whole section, as a kid, I really liked. He's covered in shit, he's spraying him down, Rob Lowe obviously hates him, brothers don't shake hands, brothers got a hug, and the whole thing where I'm a maniac, which is another joke that doesn't work anymore because it's a Flashdance reference 10 years too late. I don't know. They rarely film a movie in chronological order, right? They typically film the whole thing out of order. This, to me, though, felt like some of the earliest stuff they shot, maybe because it had Rob Lowe in it, because Chris Farley's performance for, I would say, the first 20, 25 minutes of this movie is almost nails on a chalkboard. It's too much.
And he would drink about 30 to 50 cups of coffee a day just to get into that frantic mode.
The one thing I did see was this was one of the rare times in his life where he was later in life when he was actually sober. Since it was his first movie, he was like super nervous about screwing it up, hence drinking all the coffee. And so because he was like doing it out of nerves, and he's replacing an addiction, right?
Yeah.
And so he wasn't drinking and he wasn't doing any drugs during the course of the filming of this movie because he really wanted to be able to give a good performance as opposed to Beverly Hills Ninja, Black Sheep, and some of the other stuff that he did. I don't know. To me, he does better in different spots of the movie. His performance feels a little bit more grounded. Basically, from the point that Big Tom dies, I don't know if that stuff was filmed later. I don't know the order of it. But it feels like somebody worked with him, or maybe he was just more comfortable in front of the camera, or he settled into himself a little bit more, because he starts off at like 15 and then eventually lands somewhere about like an 8 or a 9 with spurts of 10 or 11, which is much more enjoyable in a movie where he just has these manic outbursts, but then the rest of the time he's just a likable guy. The first 20 minutes of this movie, he's just on all the time, and not in a good way. As a middle-aged man now, his teenage me thought it was funny all the way through. I couldn't stand the first 20 minutes of this movie.
I'm with you, and I even wrote down: is this a part of what society sees as funny moving? Did comedy change, or did my taste change because this wasn't funny anymore?
No, none of it.
And so I wasn't sure, just because instead of 17, I'm 37. Or is it just that I've grown with what is culturally funny and that's not it.
Yeah.
It may be, it's probably both.
Like the Jim Carrey effect, where it's like bingo. You go back and you're like, this guy fucking sucks.
That's what I was thinking.
Right.
Because you feel like he's trying too hard to be funny.
Now, see, here's the weird thing though, right?
But I
used to have the best of Chris Farley DVD from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
Right. I liked and still occasionally watch like the Matt Foley motivational speaker. Same thing. He's on 25. He's been down in the basement for the last 4 hours drinking coffee.
Which is
whatever.
Probably pretty accurate.
Right? That's funny. It's still funny.
Mm-hmm.
The him doing the Chippendales dance with Patrick Swayze, where he's just all over the place. That's funny. The frozen crystal coffee crystals, where he's like, you what? You son of a bitch.
What? You son of a bitch. You no good damn son of a bitch.
That's hilarious. That's one of my favorite ones. The anchor who's like, you know, I'm not camera friendly. Yeah. I don't know how to wipe properly. I won't use deodorant. I won't let my scabs heal. all of those are over the top characters. I think what it is those are 3, 4, 5 minute sketches.
They're doses.
Yeah. It's not 20 minutes of him just bouncing off the walls. Those jokes, if you want to call them jokes, don't land.
Yeah, they don't land. And this was going to be my caveat to differentiate between Jim Carrey and Chris Farley, is it didn't seem like I was being drained. I felt like he was trying his hardest to be entertaining.
Yeah.
So it was. You could feel almost that little bit of desperation. I have to be funny.
Yeah.
In the
first
part of the performance,
right.
Where I think you feel that with Jim Carrey, but it's because I need a draw from you.
Yeah. I need you to.
Yeah.
I need your attention. With Chris Farley, it's almost like I need your love.
I need your love. And part of me almost was saddened by it, because you could see someone, even though he was off of the sauce and off of the drugs, you could see he was replacing it with caffeine because he didn't believe in himself.
Yeah, right.
And you could see what drove him to his eventual end.
Yeah.
And that almost made the movie almost sad for me.
Yes.
In a way, because I grew up with Chris Farley. Chris Farley was one of those, you stay up to watch Saturday Night Live to watch Chris Farley.
Right.
You watch this movie, you watch Black Sheep, you watched, I think those are the only two I really watched, to be honest with you.
Well, he was in Dirty Work, right?
Dirty Work, yeah.
Yeah, where he was like, the Saigon whore bit off my nose.
Yeah,
and then he was in Billy Madison.
Billy Madison.
He's the bus driver, yeah.
And he was in Wayne's World, so it's a triumphant return.
Yes, he was in Wayne's World. Yep, so Triumph Return. And Rob Lowe from Wayne's World. He was the main villain.
Both
in that,
of them
so,
were.
Yeah.
So for me, like, I grew
hang
up.
Hang on. If I don't do it, we'll get emails.
Yes.
It's the Triumphant Return! Both those guys.
Those dudes.
Those dudes, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so I mean, I grew up loving him. And I grew.
Yeah, me too.
And it's almost, he was almost like the, of our generation, the Kurt Cobain of comedy.
Yeah.
The star, the next big thing that ended too quickly and ended too soon. It was tragedy. You couldn't believe it.
Yep.
And so he was catapulted into this legendary status. And so as I'm watching it now in 2020, seeing some of the jokes don't land, like, is that for me? That you couldn't do that joke where she's getting out of the pool.
Oh, yeah.
Is that a gift for me, Dad? No, it's
and
for me.
They use the R word like three
twice.
Times.
Yeah, two or three times.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, some of those just don't fly. But yeah, so I'm watching, I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to go and record a podcast for someone who I almost idolized, who me and my friends replicated. We would do skits for our church and whatever of Matt Foley and of this different kind of stuff. And I'm going to go and I got to be honest, I didn't like the movie this time around.
Oh boy.
And so like it was hard for me because it was like part of the nostalgia.
Yeah.
And part of
sometimes it's hard to go back.
It's hard to go back. And, and it's not the same as when you left it. But yeah, that part of that was hard for me watching it and knowing what I know now about him.
Yeah.
And just there's just kind of a feeling of sadness.
Yeah.
Because someone who really truly loved to entertain people.
Yeah.
Kind of like Robin Williams, but with a much smaller gap. Someone who loved to entertain people and loved that and just died too soon.
Yeah.
Because he never felt the love that actually people shared for him.
Yeah. It is kind of sad. Now, to this movie's credit, I know we've been kind of ragging on it so far. To the movie's credit, it does spend an extended period of time trying to establish its characters mm-hmm. and its world, roughly about like 30 minutes. But, you know, in an hour and 30-minute runtime, it's roughly a half hour of it is Brian Dennehy's character and Sandusky, Ohio, and just like the plot doesn't really get started until he dies. And so I'm appreciative of that because I think Big Tom's death, like I said earlier, it kind of grounds Tommy and it gives him like humanity, you know, and the more human moments, even while he's being goofy, I think work better for me than the pure mania of those earlier scenes that I was trashing.
Yeah.
Like once he's sitting there and he's at the loading dock and he goes out in the boat with Michelle the first time. And, you know, there are still those goofy over the top moments. But once Big Tom dies, like I don't know if it was an intentional thing of like, you probably shouldn't be bouncing off the walls if your dad's dead, or if it's just him more comfortable in front of the camera. But whatever it was,
yeah.
He comes down just enough that the movie to me actually starts to become watchable in a weird way.
Well, I notice is he acts a lot more babyish in the first part.
Yeah.
Like he acts like a toddler. Yeah. And then it's almost, I wonder if it was intentional where, okay, now that your dad dies, you have to grow up a little bit.
You have to be a man.
And part of the story, part of this is a son who has a larger than life dad who everyone loves.
Right.
And trying to find your own way, even though you know or you believe you're never going to be able to live up to who he is.
Yeah.
And right. That's a large part of the story. Is him trying to compare himself to his father, which gives one, I mean, for a comedy, for a stupid comedy, it gives at least a character arc for him.
Yeah.
And it gives a reason to cheer for him.
Yeah.
And like you said, it gives him some humanity.
Yep. Yep. And then, you know, from that sailboat moving forward, you know, like I said, him in the docks after the funeral, the sailboat scene where he's really given a chance to kind of act a little bit it starts to like find its momentum. I did forget about one. I remembered the boardroom scene, right? Where Big Tom has leveraged the business, taken out a bunch of loans for this new brake pad division, and never got a chance to really see it through. And so this whole company, the Callahan name is built off of the leadership of Callahan, the Callahans, right? And Big Tom being the most recent one. Yeah, he's kind of a bullshit artist. He's a salesman, but he's also a guy who has ethics and stands behind his word. And so he's a good salesman, not just because he's charming, because he's also backs honest. Yeah. And he customer relationships or whatever. He'll make it right himself and he's as good as his word. And if he says it, it's true. And he's a sort of guy you could do a handshake deal with and you know he's gonna stick by it, right? You don't even need a contract. We just shake hands, the kind of guy. And without him there, they have no faith in the rest of the people or Tommy Boy to take over leadership. The one thing I forgot is that there's two elderly people in this scene.
Yes.
There's an old lady who's obsessed about, because Sandusky is going through this, all these manufacturers are shutting down. They're the last big manufacturer. And so he's like, that's when the whores come in. You know, $25 for a whore, pay my rent. Or sleep with a whore. And she just keeps going on about whores. And the old man next to her is like, I visited one whore once in the war, and she won't let me live it down. I didn't remember that at all.
I didn't remember it, and then it came up, and I was like, it's kind of forced, but kind of funny.
I didn't find it as funny as I wanted it to.
I agree.
Like, I'm not even a big Adam Sandler fan, but the... it's Happy Gilmore, where it's just a random lady who's like, Mister, help me. I gotta get me out of here. Yeah. that is hilarious. And then when it comes back and the air conditioner falls out, Mister, help me.
Then the lady jumps on the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny, right? He's taking his grandma to the nursing home and this lady's trying to escape. I don't know if it's just maybe a little bit dark and so therefore I find it funny.
Ding.
But the whore, the old lady saying whore, I didn't find that funny.
Yeah.
I don't know if maybe it's just they needed two better old ladies or two better old people. I don't know. It just, I didn't remember it at all. And I kind of like chuckled, but I didn't get a laugh out of it.
But going back to Big Tom, Big Tom's a businessman.
Yeah.
So he's also, yes, he's a salesman, but he also has some savvy to him.
Yeah.
There's no way this dude's not getting a prenup.
That's probably true, but I think the idea was he's so lonely after the death of his wife. And he's been alone so long, he's getting older.
His son's gone.
Yeah, and so he kind of explains it. He's just like, you know, because he wants Tommy to be okay with his decision. It's just like, with your mom, he just hasn't been with anybody in a long time. He's obviously like going to try to lose weight and improve himself, right? Mm-hmm. And here's this, in his eyes, the smoke show, who's just like, seems legitimate and seems all in love with him. Love is kind of blind, man.
Yeah.
Love is basically a form of brain damage.
Yeah, I still...
Smart businessmen have made a lot of really, really bad decisions in their love life.
That's a good point, but most of them get prenups.
Probably.
If you already been married once,
yeah,
then you know it's not the easiest thing in the world.
That's true.
And who's going to agree to move away from their job and marry you within a matter of months?
To live in Sandusky, Ohio.
To live in Sandusky, Ohio.
Nothing against the good folks of Sandusky.
No. Purely because, obviously, she's with him because he makes a lot of money.
I think he's blinded by love. He thinks that it's true love.
I mean...
That the universe is just smiling on him, and here's his second chance.
I think he's just... A part of it is he's so desperate to... Like it says in the movie, to have someone to share those last years with.
Yes.
I'm thinking prenup for him. Like, second marriage, this late in life, she's younger. Prenup. But it wouldn't help anyway because he dies.
Yeah, right.
So.
Yeah, that's true, right? Maybe he did have a prenup. He just died.
That's true. That's a good point.
Right? I don't know. The first true laugh, it's not even a big laugh. But it's the first true laugh I got in this movie. Is he's got a couple of sales pitches. They don't go. I didn't find those funny. It's the first one is the guy with the model cars on his desk. And you know, new guy's puking in the corner. And it's, oh, my God. You know, and oh, here comes the meat wagon.
The other guy's brake pads. You're driving along. And all of a sudden, the kids are yelling from the back seat. I got to go to the bathroom, Daddy. Not now, damn it. Truck tire. I can't stop! Help! There's a cliff! And your family's screaming, oh my God, we're burning alive! No, I can't feel my legs! In comes a meat wagon! And the medic gets out and says, oh my God! New guy's in the corner puking his guts out! All because you want to save a couple extra pennies. To me, it doesn't...
Get out. Now.
That got the first actual laugh of me, which brings me to my point. All the best scenes in this movie are in the second half of the movie, and this movie, for maybe 35, 45 minutes, goes on a roll. You got Tommy's suicide sales pitch, where he talks about, I just want to drive, steer my car to a goddamn bridge in Parkman.
We'll be in contact.
Yeah, yeah. That was the first true big laugh I got. Him totally freaking out. His hair and just absolutely losing his shit, going gorilla. I thought that was really funny. That's 45 minutes in the movie. That was like my first real laugh. David Spade, this is all I'm going to say about him. As much as I love this middle section, David Spade trying to be a 90s slacker Steve Martin from Planes, Trains, and Automobiles doesn't fucking work. He is so acerbic, and I know that's his shtick, but he is such a... Until, I would say, this... back half of the film, right? He's so unlikable and smug to the point that when the young guy's like, I don't like you, you're a smug little weasel man or whatever.
Chris Farley laughs, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that's the same suicide self
pitch.
It is,
yeah.
You know, it's so true. I know that was David Spade's shtick, was just being an asshole. But the thing about Steve Martin in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is Steve Martin's a tight ass, but... he's also like a family man, and you kind of sympathize with him.
Yeah.
Right? The thing about John Candy, we talked about that in our Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, our John Candy episode way back in the day. John Candy is playing this oaf in Dale Griffith, but Dale is a real human being, is a competent salesman, is a good person. And he's oblivious. He's not inconsiderate, right? And so he's not, he's not annoying, which that character could really be annoying for as much like mayhem as he puts them through. With Spade and Farley, Spade has dialed up his asshole tendencies to where he doesn't feel like a real person. And then for the first, like we said, 20, 30 minutes, either does Tommy Boy. Farley eventually comes back to Earth, and then Spade kind of eventually sort of meets him, I'm just going to say it. They don't have the chops. They don't have the acting chops. Mm-hmm. They're one-note comedic characters. I'm the guy on SNL Weekend Update who's an asshole who talks shit about celebrities. Put me in his movie, and I'm the asshole, right? One note. I'm the guy who falls through coffee tables and is fat and sweaty and is all, coked up, right? Or caffeined up, depending on what era of his life it was, right? And so that's what he does. And as opposed to a Steve Martin, there's a humanity to him, as opposed to a John Candy, even if he's playing fucking Uncle Buck, Uncle Buck feels like a real human being, right? This movie flirts with being almost real and has moments of it, but veers more heavily into shtick, just one-dimensional shtick.
Yeah.
And so even when the movie is getting its momentum underneath it, they're still doing the shtick, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. And
it feels like a series of sketches. The best part of the movie is this middle part, and it feels like a series of vignettes strung together, a series of SNL sketches.
Two things about it. One, what they did in the middle section is I watched an interview. They wrote down all the craziest shit they've heard or have done on road trips. They put them all on the floor, and they pick those out. And that's what made the movie in the middle section.
Which basically just describes what I just said.
Yeah, bingo.
Right? So it feels like that. Now, here's the thing. It works.
It works.
But as far as a movie, the whole thing doesn't really come together.
No, it feels kind of
choppy.
Yeah, choppy.
Yeah.
You can have that relationship between two comedians. And what it looks like is two guys early in their career that didn't learn how to make that aspect of their comedy palatable for a 90-minute film.
Or didn't know how to be somebody other than themselves.
Bingo.
So which is acting.
Acting.
Yeah. But here's the stretch this movie goes on. Here's that series of vignettes, which I think is the strongest point of the movie. We get the suicide sales pitch. We get the fat guy in a little coat. We get the carpenters.
That was hilarious.
We get the fight where he hits him with the 2x4.
The best part about that scene is when he looks up like, oh, prehistoric forest. Like, right. That's the first point I've chuckled.
We get probably my favorite scene in the entire film at the Cluck Bucket.
Let me tell you why I suck as a salesman. Let's say I go into some guy's office. Let's say he's even remotely interested in buying something. Well, then I get all excited. I'm like JoJo, the idiot circus boy with a pretty new pet. The pet is my possible sale. Oh, my pretty little pet. I love you. So I stroke it, and I pet it, and I massage it. Yeah, I love it. I love my little naughty pet. You're naughty. And then I take my naughty pet and I go. Oh! I killed it! I killed my sale! That's when I blow it. But that's when people like us have got to forge ahead, Helen. Am I right? God, you're sick.
We move from there to the guarantee on the box, which is like my second favorite scene. You know, the guarantee fairy.
Yeah.
All of a
sniffing glue.
Bit of my airplane, he says. All of a sudden, money's missing off the dresser, and your daughter's knocked up. I've seen it 100 times.
You figure you put that little box under your pillow at night, the guarantee fairy might come by and leave a quarter. Am I right, Dad?
What's your point? The point is, how do you know the fairy isn't a crazy glue sniffer? Build model airplanes, says the little fairy. Well, we're not buying it. He sneaks into your house once, that's all it takes. Next thing you know, there's money missing off the dresser and your daughter's knocked up. I've seen it 100 times.
But why do they put a guarantee on the box, then?
Because they know all they sold you was a guaranteed piece of shit. That's all it is, isn't it? Hey, if you want me to take a dump in a box and mark it guaranteed, I will. I got spare time. But for now, for your customer's sake, for your daughter's sake, you might want to think about buying a quality product from me.
Okay.
That run is actually funny.
Yeah.
And then from there, we get the second motel scene that they're in, which is the pool scene.
Which is creepy.
It's a little creepy, but it's still funny because you have Farley going like, you know, what was that funny comedian? Buddy, whack it. Yeah.
I think he was a part of the Yankees.
Yeah. Richard. You know, because it goes from a heartwarming, like, big day tomorrow. Yep. Yeah.
What's your favorite little rascal?
Alfalfa or Spanky? And the best line in that is, sinner.
I know.
That's funny. Scene. Yeah, cut scene. The radio montage.
Oh, those are the
all
best.
The different songs. This movie nailed two things from the 90s. The first time I saw it, I felt like I was seeing it myself on screen was him in his office in the fan saying, I don't think any kid who had a box fan didn't do that at some point. And I just nailed that perfectly fine. And then this, which is, you know, it's the end of the world, R.E.M.
Yeah.
Nobody knows the fucking lyrics but at a certain point, and they nailed it.
I have that written down.
It was just like, that's what we were all doing in 1995 when that song would come on the radio.
Yeah.
Nobody knew those
and
lyrics.
And I feel fine. Yeah. You know the Carpenters? That whole shtick? David Spade actually used to do that in his car. He'd have a Carpenters song. He'd be flipping through. He's like, let me see what's on the CD. He'd be like, I'm good. Hey, you can change if you want it. He would actually put people through that in real life in his actual car. That's how it got worked into it.
That's actually funny. That 30 minutes, man, is the... Let me just ask this question. Is that the strongest 30-minute run in an otherwise mediocre movie?
Yeah.
Like, the bookends of this movie are shit.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, here's 30 minutes of a series of basically sketches... You know, and then, you know, you get the third motel, see, which is the housekeeping. You know, you want me fluff pillow.
Hello?
What kind of a hotel is this? You know, and him in his little tiny bikini underwear. It's, you know, Richard. You know, just the whole thing from the suicide sales pitch to when they make it back to Sandusky. Is that the best 30 minutes in a shit movie ever in the history of cinema?
I have written in my notes, this movie proves the journey is better than the destination. I agree with you 100%.
I just think that's... I think in the history of film, the only thing that works about this movie other than Brian Dennehy is that 30 minutes in the middle.
Because you have two comedians saying, go. You, Farley, be crazy.
Yeah.
And you don't have to really worry about anything else but being crazy.
Yeah.
Spade, make smart remarks based off of that.
Yeah.
Just do that.
Let's put them in wacky scenarios.
And maybe they figured out, okay, if we're going to say this movie, we have to, like a good coach, we have to put these players in positions to do what they do well.
Yeah, right.
What do you do well? Do that.
The part of where they get on the plane is funny. It does lead us to what I like to call Tommy Boy Laden. Yet Tommy and Richard, who hijack a plane, Tommy robs a bank accidentally. Tommy holds a downtown Chicago high-rise hostage with explosives. Question, why would the Chicago News be airing in Sandusky, Ohio? Further question, what Chicago high-rise does its crash test testing on the 60th floor of a fucking high-rise building? How the fuck do they get the cars up there?
Yeah.
It just so happens that the crash test area is just outside of the main boardroom of Zielinski Auto.
Yeah, it's almost like having a bunch of tumblers at the top of a tower, like in Batman.
Oh.
R&D sections in the middle of this giant building where something blows up, we all die.
Yeah.
Seems like a good place for it. And right around here is also where we figure out, like, okay, the relationship between...
You're skipping over the fact that Tommy Boy is a terrorist.
Yeah.
Y'all Qaeda.
But it's for a good reason.
He's a Midwesterner. He's overweight. He's a Gravy SEAL.
No one's going to see it coming.
Tommy would be out there right now picketing for his gym. Well, it wouldn't be a gym. For his local bar to be reopened because he just can't live without the potato skins. He'd show up with an AR-15 to his local county courthouse demanding justice.
Justice.
I have rights, goddammit.
I want my tater skins and my Budweiser.
Yep.
And bring back the foosball.
Tommy boy kneels for auto parts, but he stands for the anthem.
Amen.
The only other funny line in this entire back half is Dan Aykroyd doing the weirdest accent with the weirdest hair I've ever seen. But when he talks about, went a little heavy on the pine tree perfume there, son. And he's like, actually, it's pine tree from a taxi cab. He's like, great, you've pinpointed it. Step two, washing it off. Yeah. That is
funny. He's got another funny thing at the end. But I thought it was funny.
We'll disagree. I think I know what you're going to say. We got the end here. We got Tommy, Beverly, and Paul. They're all going to jail in real life. Zelensky is not going to be hailed to sign a contract while a guy has his building hostage.
Yeah.
And not only that, all he does is sell an order, right? Like an invoice for an order of $500,000 brake pads. It's not
like a contract.
Yeah. He could cancel the order after signing it on the news. Because the whole thing is they have to sell $500,000 brake pads so the bank won't foreclose and they won't be forced to sell to Zelensky. They accomplish it. Rob Lowe sabotages it. And he has a falling out with Michelle. He goes from a shit salesman to a great salesman after he feigns suicide and freaks out over chicken wings or whatever. And so then they sell it. They come home. They're the conquering heroes. Rob Lowe's fucked him over. Michelle gets the blame. They're never really together, but they break up.
What the hell's her password? Did they not have passwords in 95?
MS-DOS did not have passwords. Like, I don't really remember.
PASSW0RD.
Also, I don't know. I don't know. 1234? I don't know.
Yeah.
7777.
That's what's on my luggage.
I don't really know. So then Zelensky's going to end up buying them. Beverly has now inherited the company. Tommy Boy's lost his shares because he's leveraged them to do this gambit to sell the $500,000 brake pads. So Michelle just so happens to have a brother who's a cop in Cuyahoga Falls, and she's going to fly from the world-famous international airport of Sandusky, Ohio, to the world-famous international airport in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio.
It's like an hour. It's like a 100-minute drive or something like that?
It's probably like 2 hours. Yeah.
Yeah, but still, why would you?
You got to fly, baby. And so they find out that Beverly and what's his name? The brother, Paul. Are actually fuck buddies. They're actually married in real life. Thus, the marriage is illegitimate. Thus, her shares actually still belong to Tommy because the whole thing's illegitimate, and all of this was accomplished through taking a building hostage. None of this would work out in real life.
No, is that? That's really fucked up that your plan is to allow your wife to get screwed by somebody else so you can take part of the...
Well, he doesn't seem like he's that much of a stand-up guy because this is like the fourth or fifth time they've run this con.
Yeah, it's just...
Maybe it's a kink. Maybe they're into it.
Maybe they're swingers.
Maybe it's an open marriage, open relationship.
Yeah, it's just weird.
Take it to the body shop.
And you don't think that no one's going to...
Let you lick the lollipop.
Going through this, they're not going to find out that, we're going to vet these people who just show up. They're going to figure out that they were married.
No, not in this movie. This is a world in which you can hold a bank hostage, hold a news crew hostage, and then after holding them hostage, be like, these are just red flares.
Oh, yeah.
And then, hey, a small town save. Well, guess we're all done here.
We can hold up a bank and come right back in with no one saying anything.
Yeah, isn't the bigger story that this guy just held a building hostage, not the fact that he saved a small town?
Incited panic.
He's arrested. He's going to jail. The other thing that doesn't really fucking make sense is that Rob Lowe freaks out and runs away. He goes out a door, ends up in the crash test area magically. And ends up getting his balls crushed by some machine. Ray Zelensky then chooses to go out with the woman he just caught in the middle of committing fraud, who may or may not have killed her husband.
Yes.
Husband.
Because they wanted to get money off of somebody who owned a business.
Yeah, an auto parts business. What the fuck is wrong with Ray Zelensky?
The other thing
is it a pump it and dump it scheme?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe he knows.
A wham bam, thank you, ma'am.
Yep. And how's he going to save
it? None of this ending works.
None of it didn't work. None of that is how... Okay, so they said before that they employ 300 people. There's a sign that says there's 30,000 people in the town.
Yeah.
But closing that is going to end the entire town when only, 0.01% of the town is employed by this company?
I don't know, taxes? Maybe Callahan.
And we both know what's in Sandusky.
Maybe Callahan actually paid his taxes. What you're saying is more people probably work at Cedar Point
Bingo.
Than work at Callahan Auto Parts.
Yeah, or the associated. It's a hub for resort destination entertainment.
Yeah, right.
So that is the town's economy.
Yeah, Lake Erie Entertainment.
Maybe
yeah.
they just picked the wrong town not thinking because they didn't know the area. But.
I don't know. I think it's that they picked like a funny sounding Midwestern town.
Sandusky, that sounds like it.
Yeah, that sounds like a shithole. We'll make it there.
Make it there.
Yeah. He's given his speech, you know, did it with you, and I grew up with all you guys, and blah, blah, blah. And yeah, RT, I lost my virginity to your daughter. Rob, you were there.
That's creepy.
That's really disturbing.
You were filming.
But funny. I laughed. And that's basically the movie, right? I loved it in a preteen dream era of the mid-1990s. Speedballing off of Surge and Pixie Sticks and Sour Patch Kids. I thought this movie was fantastic. In my Husky jeans, mainlining oatmeal cream pies, snorting Rice Krispies. I fucking love this movie. In 2020, as a degenerated elderly man who no longer has a sense of humor, I found the first 20 minutes or so to be... I find the first 20 minutes of Chris Farley to be obnoxious. And I found the last 20 minutes of the movie to be preposterous. It's stupid and almost make no sense whatsoever. And they're going for that feel-good moment, and it just doesn't really land, and it doesn't really work. And except for when the guy goes, Tommy just sold $500,000 brake pads! That gave me goosebumps. Otherwise, the movie didn't really work for me as a film. It worked for me as a funny 30-minute series of sketches strung together. That's it.
That's it?
That's it. So for me, I'm going to give Tommy Boy a 4 out of 10.
Really?
Yeah, that's it.
You ranked it higher than I did.
Oh, no.
Yeah, not much. Not much.
Did you laugh out loud at all? No. I laughed out loud a couple times.
I chuckled 3 or 4 times.
That's it, huh?
That's it. I didn't find it that funny this time around.
Yeah.
But, however, one thing I thought of was this. One thing as a communicator and someone who's creating a movie like this, you're creating to a demographic and an audience.
Yeah.
It was at a time that we are no longer a part of and to a demographic that we are no longer in.
Yeah.
So for that, I'm like, okay, I get what they're going after. Another, I ranked it a little higher because of nostalgia. I think that people were wanting Farley and Spade to be the next dynamic comic duo.
Yeah, right.
And it just didn't
work. Abbott and Costello sort of a thing. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, it just didn't work out. But all that to say, I gave it a 3.8.
Seem like you gave like a 2. Like,
no, yeah, it was lower.
Yeah, it is lower.
I thought I was going to be higher than you.
Really?
I thought you were going to absolutely...
It's only because that 30 minutes in the middle there is gold. And also, that's everything that everybody quotes from this movie, and everything that everybody remembers from the movie is that middle section. And so maybe it's just rose-colored goggles or nostalgia or whatever, something that kicked in. But I found that 30 minutes, charming's too strong of a word, but I found that to be humorous. And so if the movie's an hour and a half hour of it works, only a third of the movie works. So to me, this is Jason math, so it doesn't really add up. But, you know, that's about 30%, you know. And to me, with nostalgia, I'll bump it up. I'll give it a 40%. And also because this is Chris Farley's only good movie.
Yeah.
He's good in other movies, but him as a leading man, this is the best he's got. Because he didn't make that many films, unfortunately. He passed away way too soon, you know. And so he let his demons get the better of him. And, I would have been interested to see what he could have gone on to do.
Yeah.
You know, and could he have become, could he have evolved and could he have become a better actor, quote unquote, or would he have been just lost in this shtick and just time would have passed him by? Kind of like an Adam Sandler sort of thing where it's just like, yeah, the guy made some movies that people found funny 25 years ago, but, you know, or would Netflix just back up a Brinks truck to him like they did for Adam Sandler and be like, make your shitty movies with your friends in Hawaii and we'll pay you $1 billion because we just need content. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, would he have done? Would he have gone the John Goodman? I'm just saying because he's heavy, or the John Candy route, where as his career went on, and obviously John Candy's career was cut short too. But yeah, he starts evolving as a performer. Did he have dramatic performances in him? Could we have seen him in a JFK or something like that? You know, or a dramedy. You know, could Chris Farley have been in a Coen Brothers movie, for instance, where it's broad comedy but dry almost mixed with drama? Could he have done that? You know, could Chris Farley have done Fargo? I mean, one of his last roles was he was Shrek. And you can find that stuff on YouTube where they had the sketches or whatever. I think they had parts of the movie even animated and he had done it. You know, would it have been as successful? It would have been, because it was a very different performance if you find it on YouTube. So, you know, would Shrek, I mean, those movies made like $2 billion, would he have moved into animation? Would he have done a Pixar movie? There's so many things we don't know about his life and what he would have done. So this is kind of the best we've got, other than his more famous sketches and stuff like that from SNL. El Nino is
the Nino.
Yeah, like we have a few golden years of him on Saturday Night Live in an otherwise kind of fallow period, and we have Tommy Boy. And his appearances in, you know, Adam Sandler films. That's it. That's all we got.
Yeah, I agree. This was one of those movies where I enjoyed quoting it more than I probably enjoyed watching it, but could admit it at the time.
And see, that's the other thing, right? Sometimes with a comedy, it is funny at the time, but you quote it to death, right? And so it's like a meme that it's funny the first five times, but after that it's like you've spent whatever currency that joke has been spent. Comedy works a lot like horror, where it's a subversion of expectations. And one you scream, the other you laugh. Because something you didn't expect to be said or something you didn't expect to happen happens. It's the unexpected. You can't have something unexpected if you've seen it a dozen times and said it 200 times. It stops being funny.
The antithesis of this is when the very opening of the movie, where he runs through the bushes in the beginning as a kid, then he runs and they just happen to be making a fence. And he just kills himself on the fence.
Yeah.
To me, I cracked up when I saw that when I was in my teens. I think I actually saw it with you once when we were back in our 20s.
Right.
At least I was in my 20s. And I remember just howling at it. But I've seen it. It's not funny, but it's not a surprise. Because
you know what's coming.
I know it's coming.
Yeah.
I know the beats. I know the jokes. I know what's going to happen. And I don't know if that played in why I rated it lower. Or I don't know if it's because, again, my tastes. Taste as a whole,
right?
Like a good basketball player, like we've talked before, would he be able to play across eras, or was it just great in that era?
And I think, unfortunately, with Farley's, we don't know.
That's
because
bingo. It's incomplete.
His time is so limited.
We didn't get to see if he could get evolve. We didn't get to see, like, you could even see him settling into this role.
Yeah, right.
And the other thing is, would he ever been, if he could have gotten clean?
Yeah, that's the other thing.
That's a big thing. If you'd ever been able to get himself clean
and stay sober.
Then you're dealing with a whole different animal.
Right.
So yeah, unfortunately.
Here's the other thing. Would he have been nearly as funny? To me, if this is his best movie and this is the only thing he ever made sober, maybe this points to the fact that he actually would have been funnier.
And what's the funny parts? The funny parts aren't when he's banging his head in the small airport.
That'll leave a mark or whatever.
Snake. You know, those aren't the funny parts. The funny parts is where he's riffing, when he's the paddy wagon, I can dump in a box, I've got the time.
Like,
those aren't physical comedy.
One of the best things he did, I guess this is physical comedy because it's like facial because he doesn't say anything, is when Richard goes to the bathroom in that plane scene and immediately comes back out, and all Farley's doing is sort of mugging for the camera, and he's just like, you just see him trying to put it together how he got out there. That's funnier than when he goes in and then falls all over the place in the toilet.
And so it's not like it's the fall guy. That's not what's funny in this movie. What's funny in this movie is when he actually gets to use his comedic mind.
Yeah.
When he's riffing, when he's making a look. When the best part, one of the best parts of that scene is when Spade grabs his elbow and he's like, no, I'm going to keep going, right?
Yeah.
That exuberance and something that's obviously not working, that's funny.
Yeah.
Like, he is a funny guy
when
he doesn't rely on the physical comedy as much.
Yeah.
And I think as he becomes...
There's a little bit of that goes a long way.
Yeah. Once, twice in a movie, maybe three.
Yeah.
Like, then
it's... Melissa McCarthy syndrome, which is like, watch a fat person's fall down and let their pants fall down. Right?
Yeah.
It's America's Funniest Home Videos for a comedy. it's old man getting hit in the crotch with a football, right?
Yeah.
To quote The Simpsons, right?
Yeah. Kid hits you with a football bat in the marbles.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, it that is funny, like, once in a while, but all the time it just becomes painful and numb.
All right, well, that is our review for 1985's Tommy Boy. Those are our thoughts on Tommy Boy. If we just trashed a nostalgia classic for you and ruined your childhood like George Lucas, go ahead and tweet the show at Pat and Jason, PatandJason, at Pat and Jason. Or you can always email the show, bingemovies@gmail.com. We may read your comment or tweet on a future episode. And of course, the other thing you can do for us, this really helps us out, subscribe to the show if you haven't already on your favorite podcast platform. We're there. Or, almost more importantly than subscribing, go on Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star review. If we could get like 100, 200 5-star reviews, that would be fantastic. That moves us up the rankings. The more people see us, the more people hear us, the more people participate, and the better the content becomes for all of our faithful binge lords. So share the show with your friends, share it on social media if you're not too embarrassed, and rate the show, review the show, subscribe. All of that really helps us out, and we can keep giving you hot takes about old movies all day long for absolutely free without any Manscaped sponsorships whatsoever. Otherwise, we have to sell our souls and start hawking ball toner, and I don't think you want us going on 25-minute sales pitches about ball toner.
No one wants to see that.
Because I can get a good look at CJ's balls by sticking my head up his ass, but I'd rather take his word for it. So we will be coming back. I don't make any guarantees, but we'll be coming back here, honestly, probably in the next handful of weeks. We'll have some other content we'll put up here for you in the not-too-distant future. We'll be talking about some big things in the news, like movie theaters reopening, and is it a good idea, and how's it going to work, and some other stuff we've got on tap. And then, before you know it, I'm thinking knee-high around the 4th of July.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. I think around about that time, we'll actually start having some new episodes come out for you. And so be on the lookout for those because this actually, the slate of movies for the seasons actually for the rest of 4.2 is pretty good. What are we going to do for 4.1? What are we going to do for 4.2? I don't know because none of those movies are going to come out in 2020. Yeah. So we're still looking at that. And here's the other thing you can do for us. If you have any movie podcast host that you like, that you think would be a good fit for the show, that could be a guest host for us to fill in, tweet us or tweet them and say, hey, these guys are looking for guest hosts. Because, you know, it's not like every other podcast in the world's constantly looking for guests, constantly begging people to come on their show. So I know we're the only ones doing it. So, you know, we're not asking too much. But, yeah, if there's somebody you'd like to hear or somebody you think we'd be good connecting with, let us know. Because one of the funnest things about doing this show is being able to connect with other podcasters and movie reviewers across cyberspace, across the world wide web, and connecting with those people. It makes all this basically glorified hobby a lot more fun. And also connecting with our binge lords. That's always a good thing. We get listener mail, questions, answers, new reviews, anything like that. We get feedback that says you find the show funny. I don't know what's wrong with you, but I appreciate it. Or you find it insightful. I really don't know what's wrong with you.
Read a
book,
God
damn it. Yeah. Did you eat paint chips as a kid?
Why?
But that actually honestly does mean something because other than the nutrient tablets we get from the Not Walt Disney Corporation, we don't get very much for doing this.
Yeah, and now more than ever, it's important to feel like you're part of some kind of community.
Yeah, that's true.
And feeling a part of a podcast community, as kind of silly, as fun as it is, as much as a hobby, it is good to get connected with other people who are passionate about Putting content out there, putting content about movies out there.
Yeah.
And it gives a diversity of opinions. You get to hear.
Mix it up.
And you get, you know, swap ideas with people, which it, the internet's great for, and we don't use enough, unfortunately, of Facebook. Like, that's the grand one. But with this, it's a friendlier way to exchange ideas about things that we care about. And you hear us a lot. We want to hear from you.
Yeah, we want to hear from you, and we want to hear other podcasters on. And so that way, you know, we like to shit on movies. We don't like to shit on people.
Bingo.
Unless they're Jim Carrey. And so, is he a person, though? In the meantime, folks, there's been a lot of stuff going on the internet that's been pretty negative recently. And what I would just say in certain communities, and what I would just say is, listen, be kind to each other.
Yeah.
Take care of each other. And until next time, binge on. Thank you.